Okay, two special hours now. We're going to take your phone calls with Stanton Friedman. But those of you in the military who are UFO whistleblowers, if you know something and you want to just tell us, now's the time to call as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stan, I'll let you finish up on your story before we go to calls. So you decided you sent out thousands of marketing letters to universities all around the country. And what kind of response did you start to get when you did that?
Well, I got a few talks, and then I made a lot of cold calls. I guess I'm a salesman of ideas, if you will. And I would put together, I'd get a lot of piggyback talks. And my longest trip, George, and I don't think I could do it again because I'm a little older, was 25 lectures in 35 days in 15 states. Those were all colleges and a couple of management clubs in there. So it was the enthusiastic response, first of the professional groups, and then of the colleges in general. And the colleges were always surprised by the size of the crowds. You know, if you have a nuclear physicist who worked for GE, GM, Westinghouse, et cetera, he ought to be respectable. If he's not, you can't blame him for coming to the college. If he turns out to be a nut, well, you know, you can't blame the attendee. And so it's been a long haul, so to speak. That's why lectures in 50 states, 9 provinces, and 16 other countries. The lecture business is changing, though, I must say. It used to be that there wasn't much to do in a small college town. You know, now they've got the internet, they've got Blockbusters, they've got 50 cable channels. You don't need outsiders to come to town so much. And besides, you know what, George? Travel isn't nearly as much fun as it used
to be. No, it's not. Honestly, it is a hassle.
I've taken your shoes off and all the rest of that stuff.
Your belt, if you've got a metal belt, your watch, your money clips, it really is a hassle. Stan, and then now, with what they've done on the liquids, and you know, if you get your little 2 ounce or 3 ounce, whatever you have, and put that in your little clear bag of 1 quart size, I mean, it is a hassle. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, so I'd rather stay home and write books, and I'm not stopping lecturing. I don't mean that, and I'm going to be at conferences that are coming up, as I mentioned, Roswell and MUFON, and
the big ones.
Big thing at the Edmonton Science Center, Edmonton, Alberta. You know. Oil land, if you will. That's in September. This is all on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. I'm going to be speaking near Grand Canyon in October, which I'm excited about. I've been there, but it's been a long time. I don't suppose it's changed very much.
Yeah, well, let's fulfill the promise here, Stan. 2 hours with you.
Okay.
Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Charlie from Newport, Washington.
Hello, Charlie.
Stan, you were talking about the Roswell incident. I had picked up a jet that had pulled a man through it and was taking it back to New Jersey to the plant so they could tear it down. And when I came in to Wright-Patterson, my ILS system was acting up, and I wanted to get a replacement. Well, they sent a sergeant in a jeep out to the plane, took me down to close to where the main hangar was, and it was quite a sight. They had military personnel standing at parade rest with automatic rifles all the way around that hangar. And I said, well, what's going on, Sarge? And he said, oh, we just lost one of our experimental craft, and they're putting it back together again. Well, I, of course, didn't connect it with Roswell until some months later. But then I had another instance in Great Falls, Montana, in June of 1948. I was stationed in McCord Field just outside of Tacoma.
Yeah.
And we were supporting the 2nd Division troops that were training in Alaska. Well, I had come into Great Falls, Montana, and I found out that a buddy of mine that I'd gone to school with was working the radar shack, so I got a guy to take me out there. And while I was there, there was a corporal watching the screen in the shack, and he says, Lieutenant, come here and take a look at this. And there was 5 blimps on the radar fire screen. Well, they grabbed glasses and went out. It was a beautiful day. Only one great big dark cloud northeast of the field. And here's five of those saucers hovering right across the field. Well, they scrambled the 86s. And, of course, by the time that they could scramble those 86s, these five saucers moved back off toward that cloud. Well, I had a pair of glasses, and I was watching that cloud where they went into, and they disappeared, and out of it came a cigar-shaped object, and it was just like it went from one dimension to the other. It just gradually disappeared into thin air.
Hey, Charlie, let me ask you, when you were at Wright-Patterson, did you accept the story that it was a crashed experimental plane, or did you think it might have been something else?
Well, I didn't have too much time. I thought it was something else, but I didn't mess around because I hit the ground and to get my instrument, and I had automatic weapons on me.
And all right. Thanks, Charlie, for checking in with us on that. Stan, why do you think there'd be automatic weapons there?
Because they were bound and determined to protect what they saw, what they had, rather, from people seeing it. Standard approach. The military is ready to defend its territory, so to speak. And, you know, we have recovery teams now. If when a stealth aircraft crashed near Bakersfield, California many years ago, there were guys with weapons, and people were told, if you ever talk about what you see, and I got this from somebody who was there, you know, penalty of death. So we want to protect technology, something that could give the other guy a leg up on us. That's the standard approach. You know, we're not talking playing games here. Anybody else can duplicate a flying saucer. They got an attack system that makes us look pretty silly, don't they?
East of the Rockies, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
You were asking for prior Air Force pilots to call in?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I flew F-15s out of Holloman Air Force Base, New Mexico, on White Sands Missile Range from 82 to 86. And I was attached to the 49th AGS, the 8th AMU. We were known as like Eagle Drivers, what they called us. But there was an experience that my navigator and I had at one time while flying over the range itself. And I'll be honest, I don't want to say my name because I don't know if it's been declassified or not.
I understand.
But at this time, we were doing what we call checkered flag maneuvers. And we're doing reconnaissance of the range. While in flight of the range, we encountered what we called a UFO. We weren't sure. It wasn't really a saucer, per se, as much as it was more of a triangular shape. And we pursued that for probably the better part of 20 minutes.
Ooh.
And the most ironic part about it was the entire time we had cameras filming on the plane as well. When it came time for us when we landed our aircraft and we go in for debriefing, the film and all the contents on the film, well, to be honest with you, were taken over by, Office of Special Investigations. They're known as OCI, but it's Office of Special Investigations. We went into interrogations for better than 3 weeks. We were taken off flight status.
No, where'd he go?
Whoops.
He just disappeared.
That wasn't me, George. I did not.
No, that's not you, and we haven't touched a button here either.
Well, it's the kind of story that I've heard before, but it's nice to hear it from
Can you believe that, though? I've now got to believe that somehow there's a system to monitor people who call this program, and they just push the button, and he's gone. He didn't hang up. There was no noise of a hang up at all. His line sounded like it got cut.
Hey, the NSA is out there, George, and they're listening. And, you know, it's part of the total picture here. And The government, obviously, some few people in the government reached a decision a long time ago that the good stuff doesn't get out. And if good stuff does get out, you put out garbage. There are some phony MJ-12 documents out there, for example. I discussed that in the new edition of Top Secret Magic. Standard intelligence community practice. Muddy the waters. It's interesting that the big Roswell report, you know, that 1,000-pager, the guy who put it together, Colonel Weaver, his specialty was disinformation. So if you've reached a corporate conclusion, in other words, about a certain policy, you're going to enforce it whenever you can. And, you know, people ask me, hey, Stan, why are you still alive? And my answer is that, maybe I'm doing what they want, getting the public ready for whenever the big day comes to blow the lid off the cosmic Watergate.
But well, Stan, why would they clip this guy? He's calling this national radio show. Nobody knows who he is. He's giving information that we may or may not be able to cooperate. Why clip him?
I don't know. Look, if you think I understand the government, George, you're wrong.
Yeah, well,
I don't. And I'm not a psychiatrist. People are always asking me why questions. You know, why would the government do this or that? And why don't the aliens do this? And, you know, I don't know why aliens do anything. I've got a paper on my website, the UFO why questions. And I give suggestions, but who knows? How do you check? I mean, a physicist likes to check on things, and I've gotten a way to get a feedback loop here whether my thoughts are correct. But I will say this, George. I've had many people tell me quietly of stories similar to what he was saying. I had a pilot at my lectures. I normally ask at the end, never at the beginning, how many people here have seen what I would consider to be a flying saucer? Just raise your hand. We didn't let the CIA in. You know, I'll make a crack or two. And I point and count, one, two, three, and go around the room. By the time I get to the other side, the hands are up much more readily, typically 10%. But then I ask, how many of you reported what you saw? 90% of the hands go down. If there's still somebody left, I'll say, how many of you were in the military at the time? Still left, I'll say, you want to tell us about it. Well, I had one guy say, they took my pictures and nothing more. And so I said, I'm sure the audience wants to hear the rest of the story, and you don't need to tell me your name. You don't need to stand up or anything. He was flying a four-engine aircraft out over the Pacific, another plane 20 miles ahead, radios, a saucer heading your way. They had gun cameras. They took pictures. They radioed the base they were flying to. When they got there, the film was taken, and they were debriefed and told never to say anything. Sounds similar? You know.
It should as well. If he can call back, we're holding a line open for him. Try that line again, but I have a feeling somebody snipped his phone. Maybe he's got a cell phone he can try. I'd like to get him to finish that story. And
that's a great story.
They've got that film somewhere. Can you imagine what they have put away?
Oh, yeah. One guy told me about a room bigger than a classroom, just loaded with filing cabinets in Washington. It was UFO stuff, and he was there for another purpose, but he got permission from his boss to read at noontime. He had a high-level security clearance, and tons of paper. And he told me this very quietly. He wasn't looking for attention. I get so sick of people saying, well, I just made up a story to get attention. I mean, that's the explanation for Roswell from one of the SecCop people. That public information officer just made up the story. He didn't even know his name. What an absurd notion that the public information officer for the most elite military group in the world, the 509th at Roswell, would make up a story and put it out on his own. I mean,
yeah, and didn't Walter Holt, he just died not too far back, did he?
Yeah, 2 years ago, and yeah. Walter was a great help to me in my research. He had a copy of the base yearbook.
He's the one who put out the news release that a saucer had been recovered, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yep. And his daughter runs the museum. We'll see her in Roswell in July. And, yeah, Walter was a great guy. I should mention, he wasn't just a public information officer.
For the military.
What?
For the military.
Well, yeah, but not only that. But he, during the war, had flown with the 509th. He was a bombardier, did more than 20 missions over Japan, and most intriguingly, he dropped the instrument package over one of the two nuclear weapons exploded in Operation Crossroads in the Pacific in 1946. They always picked their best guys for that, because without the instrument package, why do you run the test? So that's a testimony to his background, besides the fact that the community thought a great deal of him. I checked him out. And so, you know, I get a little irked when the noisy negativists attack the people, you know, as kooks or quacks or UFO nuts or whatever, just a PIO. He was a heck of a lot more than just a PIO.
Good for you for saying this. Wild card line, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Hi. Stanton. This is Steve calling from Fort Lauderdale, first-time caller. Stanton, I'm wondering if you ever lectured in Israel.
Yes.
And I have a compound question and a comment. They had a recent flap in Israel the last 10 years in the mid-90s to the OO, and also in Iran they've had a flap. I'm wondering if this is related to, you know, the nuclear facilities in both countries, and also have you lectured about the UFOs and their relations with in relationship with the flaps of in nuclear facilities? And if you lectured in Israel, if you lectured about, you know, the coming war that they're all predicting in the future, and I'm wondering if you had a comment about that.
No, I certainly didn't lecture about the coming war in the future. I have noted, I'm, of course, as a nuclear guy, interested in the reports near nuclear weapons tests. And I was just looking, a gentleman sent me some information about Ivy, the mic shot. The first fusion weapon, H-bomb, if you will, in 1952, and it was a 10-megaton weapon as opposed to 15,000 tons at Hiroshima. This is 10 million tons, and there were a lot of UFO sightings in conjunction with that, as well as around the facilities in the Bay Area when that bomb was being, the components were being assembled to ship out there. Yeah, there's been a long history of that, and it's one of the three reasons I give for aliens paying attention in, after the post-war period, where Earthlings demonstrated not only during the war that we were a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. I mean, we killed 50 million of our own kind, destroyed 1,700 cities. But three areas of technology, nuclear weapons, powerful rockets, the V-2s, and powerful radar. And the only place in the world in July 1947 where you could check on all three of those was southeastern New Mexico. White Sands Missile Range, Trinity Site, was where the first atom bomb was exploded in 1945. That's where we were firing the captured German V-2s, and that's where we had our best radar to track the rockets, which sometimes didn't go where they were supposed to go. Sometimes they went south, in other words, instead of north, even though they were launched to the north. So, yeah, I think nuclear weapons, I mean, look, I worked on fission nuclear rockets. I worked on fusion nuclear rockets. Every advanced civilization is going to know or learn how its star produces its energy, and that's nuclear fusion. And so when you see all this stuff going on down here, it's clear that if we don't kill ourselves first within 100 years or so of back then, we'd be able to get to the stars. I don't know about you. If I were an alien, I wouldn't want Earthlings out there.
No, not at all. We'll be back with more phone calls with Stanton Friedman, and then still a final hour of special calls as well. Okay, don't be disappointed, because we've still got another hour to go with phone calls with Stanton Friedman. But when we come back, we'll continue to look for government whistleblowers, military folks, and the rest of your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Stanton Friedman and your calls. Back to the phones we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. I've got some information that you might both be interested in.
Okay.
During the 70s, my brother was part of the team that was designing and building the shuttle at the Cape, putting it together. And they went up to Wright Pat and viewed this the parts of the saucer and aliens. And that space shuttle of ours would have never gotten built if it hadn't been for that crash at Roswell. And that,
go ahead.
You know what specifically about that that they used in the shuttle?
Well, I can say that my brother was doing weights and balances, and he knew most of the astronauts that were flying at that time, and he was telling me, of course, I hope this is long enough after the fact that, you know, it's not going to be any problem, but he was telling me that every time they went up, they were seeing saucers, or bogeys is what they called them, you know, and they'd have to be be debriefed after they came back.
Well, you know, I'd love for my post office, I've got a mailing address that people can use, Post Office Box 958 Houlton, Houlton, Maine, ME, 04730-0958. Post Office Box 958, Houlton, Maine, 04730-0958. I'd sure like to hear from people about things like what you're talking about, where you can give as much detail as possible and where we're not broadcasting on the air, so people can, the bad guys can follow up on what's going on.
It's true, like they've already clipped one caller, and if you're still with us, did the astronauts tell your brother-in-law what they saw up there?
My brother. My brother, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Very, very freely, like he was one of their own, I guess, right?
Well, he was.
Yeah.
He was one of the engineers on that space shuttle.
So when your brother would tell you, I mean, was he in shock, or did he say, my gosh, these things are really happening?
No, he you know.
Took it for granted.
He wasn't in shock. He was just telling me, you know, as a brother. And
how about you? Were you in shock when he told you?
Well, yeah.
That's what I
know. Yeah, sort of.
Well, George, you know, I've spoken at the Space Center and at Houston, as well as in Florida, and some of my best audiences are engineers and scientists involved in the space program. So they don't seem to be shocked. They know secrets can be kept. They know there's a lot of stuff out there that we don't hear about. I've admittedly met people who are very dubious that secrets can be kept for any length of time. And, you know, I point out that the NRO, for example, launched seven Poppy, that was the name, I don't know where they got that from, the flower, but Poppy satellites back between 62 and 1971. Very expensive. That first information about that was in 2005, mind you, from 62 to 2005. So secrets can be kept, but people who work under security are well aware of that. And they never question that secrets can be kept when I talk to those audiences.
Stan, these are incredible stories, I'll tell you. They just keep rolling in. A lot of good data. You pick up things. Did you ever talk to the late astronaut Gordon Cooper about his sightings?
Yes, I did, and he was very interested. He was upset by the fact that there were a lot of quotes being attributed to astronauts that were not genuine quotes. And I don't know, most people don't know it, I suppose, but Buzz Aldrin actually sued Charles Berlitz and the publisher of the first Roswell book, The Roswell Incident, for saying that he saw UFOs on the moon. And you know what? He won, because they hadn't demonstrated that that was true. And so, yeah, Gordon was very interested. He sent a letter to the United Nations. He's talked in his book about what happened out at Edwards Air Force Base and footage and so forth. The sixth man on the moon, Dr. Mitchell.
Edgar Mitchell?
Edgar Mitchell, yes.
Apollo 14.
He has talked about people telling him about that Roswell was real, that flying saucers are real. And so several of the astronauts, I spoke with William Anders, who was on that first flight around the moon, and he was very interested in UFOs. He wouldn't tell me anything, but I had known him before he was an astronaut. And we talked about UFOs for 2 hours at a meeting of the American Nuclear Society, reach chairing sessions. And when I asked about astronaut sightings, he was very, very cautious in what he said. And I still had a security clearance at that time, and I know he did, but that doesn't give you a need to know, so I didn't push. And I've heard that before from others who talked to astronauts, and I actually got invited to speak to the NASA people at North American Rockwell Downey. They built the command module for Apollo.
What do they want you for?
They wanted to pick my brains about UFOs. They took me around. They even took my picture with the command module, you know. But they weren't telling me anything.
But they were listening. Wild
card
line.
They were listening, and the talk was not open to North American people, just to the NASA people.
That's it. All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Sven. Yes, sir.
It's fantastic to, of course, talk to you guys. Been listening for 20 years. I'm coming from NASA. And there's two things. One, an incident. I saw one of these things take off 40 years ago. And at the same time, I saw a cover-up, and it just plays right into what you guys were talking about, dealing with Gordon, Buzz Aldrin, and the League of the Astronauts with John Glenn. So I don't know which one you want to hear from.
Well, you give us both of them.
All right, that's fine. I used to live in San Diego, and as a child, you know, we were just playing ball, and we were noticing jets taking one after another taking off. Well, this is Miramar Air Force Base, which is now known as Top Gun, or used to be. And they were scattering one after another. And so we were curious about what was going on. We never saw this. And then all of a sudden, something caught my eye, and I looked up, and there was an orange-colored wagon wheel-shaped object going north to south. And within few seconds, no blinking lights, nothing scattering. It just disappeared. I mean, just went into the horizon. Meanwhile, jets are now still taking off one after the other. So I tell my friend, I said, did you see this? You know, we start joking, thinking that it might land in school and take over the school or something. And, you know, still playing ball and still watching the jets take off. And 45 minutes later, and I looked at my watch when I saw this thing again, I said, Bill, look, take a look at this. And we looked up, and we saw the same object going in the same parameter, 45 minutes, which is also important to know how long it takes to go from one horizon to another with a shuttle. But this just went in the same pattern and went back. And from that point on, I had to figure out what this thing was. Normally if we were going to see an object or something like that, you know, but this was a solid orange wagon wheel-shaped object. Went to our parents, told them his father worked at General Dynamics, said it was marsh gas. That was a joke. There's no marsh in San Diego. And dear old dad would say, you know, well, you drank too much root beer. But the reality is that we saw this. So, you know, I start putting together everything I could possibly read about UFOs and say, okay, obviously it's orange, white, follows electromagnetic waves and everything, getting into it. So that started a path into all of this. So later on, I find myself now working at NASA, and they have an inauguration to allow all the astronauts into the Hall of Fame thing. Well, here was John Glenn and Gordon, Buzz Aldrin, all of them sitting together. And someone got up, not myself, got up and said, did you guys ever see a UFO? Well, I had seen the documentary with Gordon talking about the UFO that he saw taking off from Edwards. I saw the documentary with Buzz Aldrin saying, I think it was Buzz, the first Apollo going up, and they saw something following them.
Yep.
And they called Houston and said, did you see our second stage? No. And they kept on watching this object. Well, since they asked this question, Gordon shot him a look that you would give a five-year-old, a Marine stare down, and looked at the woman and said, no, we've never seen a UFO. So,
Gordon said that?
No. John Glenn. John Glenn shot him, the Marines there.
Shot him, okay.
Yeah, and just shut everybody up, and then deadpan looked out and said, "No, ma'am, we've never seen anything like that."
And did they all shut up after that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here's a factor. I've seen an object that I can't define, and at the same time, I've seen other people talk about it, yet, you know what, the government shuts us up. And again, and I'm afraid I'm at the Sam Friedman point where you think, well, now what's the reason, though? Why, you know, what's the story behind all of this stuff?
So, are you still with NASA?
Hopefully after this phone call.
You never know.
I actually provided you the pictures for about Stephen Hawking and a few other things.
Sure. Okay. You got to tell me if they somehow fire you over this, I want you to call us.
I'm sure if anyone hears the show, I'll be nicely ribbed. But I absolutely love NASA, too. I mean, there's so many things that they do as a government agency, which they actually have something to show. They actually have to produce something to help, you know, the men again in a lot of ways. And it's amazing to me. But, I mean, watching the cover-up and knowing that this stuff does exist, it's all out there.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Isn't that something, Stanton?
Yeah.
My gosh.
Par for the course.
Yep, I was going to say, you've been talking about this for years. Wild Card Line, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hello, George. This is Gregory in Texas.
Hello, Gregory. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Stanton.
Hi.
Stanton, I met you for the first time back on September 25th of 1999 at the Jeff Rentz Best of the Best Conference in Santa Barbara, California.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and I then I met the conference.
You. Yeah, then I've seen you again a few years later at the 6th Annual Bay Area UFO Conference.
Yep, remember that one?
While I was there, I listened to all the different lectures, and I was given an angel pin by Judy Goodman.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I believe this angel pin was a homing device to nail me for an abduction, which occurred 5 days later. I had three California Highway Patrol cop cars behind me, and I was driving northbound on 101. Well, all the cop cars disappeared, and I felt the vehicle jerk off the ground, then everything went into like a video game. All the yellow lines on the... Everything just became perfect. There was no trash. There was no imperfections in the street or anything. That was 5 days after the conference. I believe I was targeted for abduction, which have had over 500 abductions at this point. Chip implantation, and also I had to undergo a brain operation. And this all occurred and started at the Jeff Rentz Best of the Best Conference at the Miramar Conference Center, which has been closed down since this has happened to me back in 99. Now,
I didn't know that, but I remember the conference, lovely location, Santa Barbara, and all that sort of stuff. Look, there's an awful lot going on, and, you know, even though the media in the general haven't done a good job in the past of covering it, I hope that has improved this year thanks to that Tribune article. But if we ever get the full story, it'll be shocking. I mean, there already Dr. David Jacobs teaches a college course on UFOs and has for almost 30 years. There's plenty of information out there, and it comes as a shock to people that at the end of my lectures, when so many people have had sightings and that 90% of them haven't reported what they have seen. But there's an enormous amount of stuff out there, and it shows you how useful it is if you can get people to think that they're going to be ridiculed if they talk about something like that. That seems to be more effective at shutting down discussion, the fear of ridicule, than at intimidation, direct intimidation.
Yeah, that's true. Fear of ridicule and losing your career.
Yeah, well, that helps, yes.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello.
Hello, George. My name is Louie from Las Vegas.
Yes, Louie.
How you doing? Hi, Stanton.
Hi.
I was curious about something because over the years I've been, curious about the alien abductions, and it seems that a good portion of them, they do medical testing. I saw a show one time, and it was pretty amazing to me because it's a medical condition where basically children, they prematurely age. The characteristics, to me, they look very much like a blend between humanoid and the gray ones. They have large skulls. They tend to be very intelligent, way beyond their years. They tend to age and die at an end of 20s. And I wondered if anybody has done any work or has anybody have looked into that angle of it, possibly that being an outcome of some of the experimentation. Have you heard of anybody doing that or anything going along that line?
Well, Dr. David Jacobs of Temple University, the guy who teaches the course I was just talking about, he's done four books on abductions, and certainly the whole business of hybridization is a primary focus. Bud Hopkins talks about that in his books, too. I wish I could tell you that there's going to be a show, we're lucky in Canada, called Best Evidence on May the 10th on the Space Channel in Canada, but it's not in the United States. It won't be dealing with abductions, but certainly it's an area that I would like to see more discussion on. I mean, if people are sensitive about reporting a sighting, you can imagine how they feel about reporting an abduction. And that's why the book Captured, I'm hoping, by Kathleen Martin and myself, will encourage people to come forward. It's about the Betty and Barney Hill case, but there have been loads of other abductions, and one of the things Kathleen Martin, Betty's niece, talks about is Betty's attitude about some other abductees, whether that was a genuine abduction or not. And people ask me, how do you feel about abductions? And I say, each case must be taken on its own merits. You know, I'm not going to make a generalization about all people who claim to have been abducted have been, or all people who claim to have seen a UFO have really seen an alien spacecraft. I'm not going to say that at all. But we need more open discussion. We need a serious review of all this stuff. There will be Yvonne Smith will be at the Roswell conference, 60th anniversary at the museum, and she'll be talking about abductions. It's an area that needs a heck of a lot more work. You know, we need an international association of abduction researchers with a journal, and there is a new journal.
And I understand, Stanton, that John Carpenter, the investigator, is coming back into the business. Hey, Stan, stay with us. We'll be back with a final hour of phone calls. Also, I'd like you to talk about that Mary Fish map based on the Betty Hill journey.